Good evening, and welcome to the October 25th meeting of the City Council. Let the record show that all council members are present, and we'll begin our meeting with a moment of silence. Thank you. For our business tonight, we have Brian Hendricks from Estero Bay Graphics, and he's going to tell us. He's going to lead us in the pledge first. Brian.
Please join us with a pledge of allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, and Brian's going to tell us about his business, and I asked Gary Johnson to come up and sort. Well, you can put the hat on, too. Yeah, I just wanted Gary to be sort of a model for him. He's his Vanna tonight. There we go. Okay, Brian, tell us about Estero Graphics.
All right. Hi. First of all, I'd like to thank everybody for allowing me this opportunity to come out here tonight. I am Brian Hendricks. I am co-owner of Estero Bay Graphics with my wife, Anastasia. We've been in business for roughly about 20 years. We focus hard on quality, integrity, and innovative concepts for people. We also like to be part of our community. We are involved with a lot of nonprofit groups and other things as well. This has always been a lifelong dream of mine to have my own art studio slash graphic design place here in Morro Bay. I am a resident of San Luis Obispo County my whole life. I was born and raised here on the Central Coast and have lived in Morro Bay for the last 25 years. Also in our business, we offer a lot of other things that most people don't know about, but we have a storefront in there that offers over 35 different Morro Bay designs, and we offer our t-shirts all for under $10 a piece, and so we try to make it affordable for everybody. We invite people to come in and visit us. We're located at 655 Morro Bay Boulevard here in Morro Bay, California, next to Foster Freeze. And anytime you'd like to, we just launched a website, which is EsteroBayGraphics.com, and you can come and check us out there as well. And this is our latest thing that we did for the Morro Bay Photo Expo.
All right, I'm going to chime in here and say, if AGP, if you can get a close-up of that photograph. This was a color photograph that we gave to Brian, and he did all that black and white shading and everything so that it would come out really attractive. He's done our bird festival artwork for years, and we just take him a bird, and he creates this beautiful scene for it. So it's not just getting something printed. He's an artist. And he does wonderful work for us, so and like really good prices.
I'd like to add to this that 9:30 Saturday morning, Barb came up to me and says, "We're out of some size shirts. What can you do for me?" I called Brian. Would you believe in 2.5 hours he had 28 shirts printed for us? Now that is doing business in your local community.
Yep. Thanks, Brian.
Well, once again, thank you. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Have a good night.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Other announcements. You'll see. Okay. Then I won't list that because it was really interesting what they found. I hope you're going to tell people. And then also there has been some question about at our last JPA meeting, we said we'd have a workshop on the environmental impact report, and that workshop is going to be this Thursday. And where's it going to be? Andrea, is it here or?
It's in the community center multipurpose room beginning at 5.
Okay. And what that's going to be, it's going to be not just a hearing. It's going to be an actual ask questions, get direct answers, kind of a sit-down, chat about it workshop. So there will be information presented as well, sort of in the middle of the meeting. Going to start with questions and answers, do a presentation at 6, have more questions and answers. If you have questions or concerns about the environmental impact report for the wastewater treatment plant, now is the time to ask them and get your individual answers. You won't have to wait in a line or anything. So I hope you will all come out if you're interested in that. It's not going to be televised because workshops, by their nature, are very hard. You can't get all the different tables and conversations in them. So it's your chance to come and talk one-on-one. And I would hope that our planning commissioners would also take advantage of that, because I know they had some questions when they reviewed the EIR.
Madam Mayor, it also will receive input, won't it, formally, not just be a workshop?
Yes, absolutely. It is open for receiving information right now, the environmental impact report. So that's why we're doing this, okay? I think that's it on my announcements. Betty?
No.
Rick?
Partners in Community Action was here today at the Senior Center with their medical, with their professional medical personnel. So I hope you didn't miss it. If you need free blood work or advice or talk about your medication or anything like this. So remember, they're always here on the fourth Monday of every month. And then we've got up on the screen there, if we can get that on there, we have the contributors to the Thanksgiving dinner here in Morro Bay that we do every year, and it's going to be on Thanksgiving Day. And I can't read them all from here, but Albertsons gave us 40 turkeys, so we hope we have a lot more than 40 people, because it'd be hard to eat a whole turkey. So last year we had about 350, and so we anticipate a few more this year. So we're getting extra stuff, more stuff. Mission Linen, Cookie Crock, like I said, Albertsons. Top Dog's Coffee. I can't read it from here, so if I'm missing any, Carla's, yeah. And the Morro Bay Police Officers Association. Those two groups really are the spearheads of this endeavor. So it's a lot of fun, and if you want, and that'll be serving from 1 to 3 on Thanksgiving Day. We'll have entertainment if Chief Olivas comes through with his request. So I'll appreciate that. And if you want to put on the other thing about the Dial-A-Ride, we'll have free transportation. So where else but Morro Bay can you call, get a trolley to come pick you up at your house and take you to a free... So there is such a thing as a free lunch. And we will be doing that on Thanksgiving Day. There's the phone number to call the trolley. Call them beforehand, make an appointment. They'll come pick you and your group up and deliver you and take you home after you eat. So it's going to be great. So look forward to seeing you all. And that's all I got.
Okay. Noah?
Yeah, thank you. Just wanted to update you all on a couple of events over the weekend. One was our tree committee and the Rec and Parks Department conducted a successful tree planting down at the community center, city hall, and library parking lots. We had great turnout and participation from a number of groups. I'd like to read them quickly because they all put a lot of sweat equity into the project, and we all had a good time. It was the 4-H. Boy Scouts and Cub Scouts 214, the Girl Scouts group, our FFA, the California Conservation Corps, the California Urban Forest Council, our Morro Bay Tree Committee, Rec and Parks Departments, Spencer's and Top Dog Coffee provided great snacks, keep us going through the day, and of course Estero Bay Graphics did our t-shirts, which our tree committee was wearing and we made available to members of the public. The trees that we planted were all supplied through a grant program with the California Relief Program, and we really look forward to continuing to plant more trees in the community. We also had the first opportunity for the Morro Bay City Tree Vote to cast your ballot there, and I have set it up in the back, which is basically an opportunity to, as we've identified the dahlia as our city flower, we'd like to find out from the community what is our city tree, what is the tree that we most resonate with. And we have 6 options suggested and a write-in option. And the Bay News and Neil Farrell have done a great job of helping us take pictures of some sample specimen trees of these each varieties, and have made it available in the Bay News, a write-in ballot that you can mail into the Bay News, or we're also going to have what's set up in the back available at City Hall if you'd like to come into City Hall and cast your vote. And Mr. Farrell and the Tree Committee have nominated me to cook dinner for, I think, up to 8 people for, we're going to draw from the ballots that are cast, we're going to draw, and just, you know, life in general got in the way of others attending. So Mr. Keough wanted to, again, extend an invitation to anyone who would like to take a tour. He's always open to conducting a tour, whether it's one or a number of people, and I'm considering maybe setting up another date sometime in the next month just so that we make sure that it's available, because it was very beneficial to take that. And I see the North Main businesses here, so we're looking forward to their Halloween celebration, and I'm glad that they're going to be announcing the event this Halloween.
Okay.
mine's short. Just a reminder that Friday night is a home football game at Morro Bay High School.
Yay. Rick, you had something to correct?
Yeah, I've been corrected. I think that was last year's flyer. The actual date of Thanksgiving is November 25th. If you want to ride, call the transit office, please, by Wednesday, November 24th. And it should be told that the drivers are volunteering their time from MV Transportation.
Well, and speaking of volunteers, I forgot to thank everyone who was involved with the Morro Photo Expo. It was our second annual. It was very well attended. The people who were there, despite the rain, really enjoyed themselves. And it's all volunteer, organized, and run. So I really appreciate all the people that were instructors. We have some wonderful photographers in this area, and they donated their time to share their expertise with a lot of people. So it was a very, very nice event, and we look forward to next year's as well. And AGP helped us out a lot, too. I see Zeke smiling at me. Okay. Staff reports. Harbor. Eric, Sue.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, Council. A few updates I have here. I'll try to be quick. On Saturday, we held our second annual Jesse King Memorial Paddle. If you recall, Jesse was one of our lifeguards that came through us to the Coast Guard several years ago, who died in a diving accident up in Cambria, I think in 2008. It's the second year they've held the paddle. We had approximately 60 people turn out. The weather was great. Great turnout. Everybody got through it, long course and short course. And that funds toward that go towards the Morro Bay Lifeguard and Junior Lifeguard programs through the Community Foundation. As Mayor Peters began at the beginning of the meeting there, we had a dive cleanup on Sunday orchestrated by our Depth Perceptions Diving Services up in San Luis Obispo. It's about the third one. Chuck's been involved with many of these dive cleanups over the years, but this one was billed as the third annual. We've done two at the North T Pier. This one was at the South T Pier, and in talking to Chuck, we're going to start hopscotching on down the bay and try and get some of the other areas. There's a pretty long list here. I won't read it all, but you know, a lot of the stuff is bicycles and bottles and cables, oil filters, 14 tires, a car battery, two large industrial batteries that still need to come off the bottom, crab nets, a cylinder block, an engine cylinder block, some dragnet and cable, an air compressor, pipe joints, valves, wrenches, all sorts of weird miscellaneous stuff, copper wire. We recycle everything we can. This metal, the tires we send out through Morro Bay Tire, and we get them recycled, and everything else ends up going in the trash. Lifeguard towers came off the beach last week. No, lifeguard season ended in Labor Day weekend, but we just got around to getting the towers off the beach. And trash can pads out at the rock. We used to have a number of small concrete pads out at the rock that held all the trash cans that kept them in place. They've kind of eroded and disappeared over the years. Well, Roger Allen, our maintenance aide, over the last month, the month and a half, has organized a great group of donating folks that came up with supplies and labor to put some new pads out there to set all the concrete on. And those folks that donated things were Oasis Building Supply for the rebar, Hanson Aggregates, the batch plant out there for concrete, Surfwood Construction for the wood and labor, and again, Roger for orchestrating it all. And that turned out really nice. The pads are in place, and the trash cans are setting up good. And we did put a number of new garbage cans in there as well. And last but not least, this weekend we had a small taste of winter, a little bit of rain. Not really stormy, but the surf's gotten pretty big today, and as you know, it blew pretty good. So just want to remind everybody out there in TV land that has boats and that go down to the beach to, number one, start thinking about your boat lines and everything out on the water for wintertime when the storms start blowing through. And for those of you that go down to the beach and want to observe the beauty of the ocean in the wintertime when the big waves come in, just be careful when you're down there because the surf gets big and it gets big fast.
Thank you. Okay, Recreation and Parks, Joe.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Special thanks to all the volunteers that came out this weekend and helped us plant trees at the community center and the surrounding buildings there. It was a terrific turnout. Thank you, Councilman Smuckler. It is the first step in a step of three different we'll probably have three or four more phases to finish up our civic landscape improvement program. So the trees are in. We're going to come back in with coffee berry, lemonade berry bushes that will go in throughout, and there will also be some certain types of grasses that we put in. So we're still not done working on a landscape. We've got a huge start, and a special thanks to all the volunteers that came out. The Community Foundation is sponsoring a concert again this year. Last year we had a tribute to Joni Mitchell. This year, Morro Bay sings the Beatles. So if you're a fan of the Beatles, come on out. People out there in the community, that if you're at one of our city parks, your dog needs to be on a leash. Unless you're inside the confines of Joni Giannini Family Dog Park, and then they can go off leash. So just a warning, probably get that training done within the next 2 or 3 weeks, resources permitting, but just letting the public know that's coming down the line. Thank you.
Thank you. And Public Services, Rob.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, City Council. Excuse my voice. I'm about to lose it, I think, here. But first thing I want to announce is we have a new interpretive sign panel that will be going up on the Embarcadero area, Harbor Walk. We have two of these panels that we're going to be placing. It's in conjunction with our stormwater NPDES permit, and it's focusing on trash in the ocean, kind of keying off of what Mr. Endersby had to say, and it's a little educational flyer on trash and what kind of damage it can cause in the ocean. This is in lieu of our permit requirements. Was to the regional board wanted us to produce some flyers and pass them out at the hotels, and we didn't want another flyer that would become trash. This is in lieu of flyers at the hotels. It's something that'll be a permanent display down on our Harbor Walk area, and gives a little bit of education also. Little update on the North Main Bike Lane and Overlay Project. The project's about a third of the way complete. Much of the perimeter improvements are done. The concrete works with curb ramps and sidewalks. We've had a potential delay in the project because of the availability of all things, the thermoplastic striping. Because of so many paving projects across the country, the thermoplastic striping is very rare these days. Most of it went to the East Coast to beat their paving season. Now we're starting to get a little bit of it back in California, but they say they're about a month out before they can get any striping materials here in California. And I know that on Highway 101 they've paved, but they haven't striped that. We'd prefer not to have pavement down without any striping on it. So we're looking at alternatives, some temporary striping perhaps, or delaying the paving until the striping is available. And as was mentioned earlier, the wastewater treatment plant, EIR, the comment period is still open. It'll be open until November the 4th. Comments should be sent to the Public Services Department at 955 Shasta. And to my attention for written comments, we have comment cards available at our offices. The EIR is available online at the public libraries in both Morro Bay and Cayucas, and at both the Sanitary District office and our office. And we are having a third public meeting for the comments on the wastewater EIR October 28th between 5 and 8 p.m. Multi-purpose room, community center. The schedule is going to be an open house first, where there'll be some posters up to people can look at, ask questions. ESA will then give a presentation like we've seen before at both the Planning Commission and the JPA, and then we'll follow that up with more questions. Oral questions will be recorded by our EIR consultant and summarized and responded to. Any written comments will be responded to directly in writing by our EIR consultant. And that concludes my update.
Okay, thank you. And closed session report, Rob?
Yes, good evening. Prior to the regular session, council met in closed session on a number of items. They discussed real property transactions. The property discussed was the Market and Pacific property, which is currently in escrow. The council did take action on this item and amended the escrow instructions to allow for a 9-month extension to install the public elevator, and also to accept a deed of trust instead of a bond or credit line of credit to perform the public elevator installation. As to the other items, the property what discussed was the moorage of two vessels in the harbor, which is the AIS harbor dredge boat, The other item discussed was 1215 Embarcadero, and the other item was 833 Embarcadero, and the final item was Surf Street parking lot regarding the Maritime Museum. All of those items, no action was taken that requires reporting under the Brown Act. Those three items I mentioned, 1215 Embarcadero, 833 Embarcadero, and the two vessels from AIS are all on the agenda.
Contributed money and prizes to make this jogathon a success, and I ask you to show your appreciation for their support to our children by thanking them personally and patronizing their businesses. Betty Winholt's tutor donated a grand prize of a bike and a helmet for the children who brought in the most money. Bottle Liquor and Deli, Best Western San Marcos Inn, Beach Bungalow and Suites, Lolo's Mexican Restaurant, Farmers, Kites, Surreys, and more, Morro Bay Drug and Gift, Dr. Laylee Chabon, Central Coast Music, CP Landscapes, Hanno's Real Estate, Maritime Logistics, Mike Burton Trucking and Grading, Ed Cry and Son General Engineering Contractor, F. Bento Trucking, Brenda's Mobile Dog Bath, Gold Tree Jewelers, Morro Bay Aquarium and Gift Shop, Henson's Tire Pros, Oasis Equipment Rental, San Luis Sports Therapy, Treasurer's Antique Mall, The Cotton Ball, Glassworks, Tire Works, Mi Casa Restaurante, West Coast Properties, Dockside Restaurant and Market, SenCal Roofing, Fitness Works, Solmia, Taco Temple, Miner's Hardware, Reveille Dolls and Stuff, Morro Bay Furniture, Urgent Care of Morro Bay, Ron Jordan Concrete, The Hungry Fisherman, Chris Lawing Massage Therapist, Shoreline Church, Elizabeth Fry, My Pillow Pets, TKD Surf Shops, Whiz Kids, Cookie Crock, Spencer's, Trader Joe's, Sunshine Health Foods, Regal Entertainment Arroyo Grande, Walmart Arroyo Grande, DJ Cheetah, Two Muggers, Bayside Care Center for Seniors, the Carrillo family in honor of her father, plus all the wonderful Morro Bay citizens who donated all the kids' laps. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's an impressive lineup. Pull the microphone down. There you go.
Hello, my name is Haley Reveille, and I am from Del Mar Elementary. Thank you for all your support. We need all of your continued support to run a successful school. Thank you again, Del Mar staff and students.
Thank you. Okay, well, while we're students there, if you don't mind, I'm going to ask our representative from Morro Bay High School to come up next because they all have homework to do and early getting up in the morning.
Good evening. My name's Maduri. For those of you who don't know me, I'm the Morro Bay High School City Council representative. I'd like to start out by thanking the city leaders and council members for helping the Estero Bay Youth Coalition create smoke-free events. And also I'd like to notify that on November 7th, the Rotary Clubs of Morro Bay and Los Osos are chartering an Interact Club at Morro Bay High School. This free event will take place at the Morro Bay High School cafeteria starting at 7 and ending around 8:30. 2 weeks ago, we had a great homecoming week. We would like to thank everyone that helped this week throughout the week. Special thanks to the police and fire department for all their help. And like mentioned earlier, we have a home game against Cabrillo this Friday and a game against Templeton on November 5th. And that's it.
Great. Thank you for being here.
Madam Mayor, thank you for having us, and City Council members, we appreciate being here. Yes, that is a little bit low, isn't it? I'm Liz Bednors from the Beach House Bistro at 2770 Main Street in North Morro Bay, and...
And I'm Laura with Harbor Floral, your flower shop in North Morro Bay.
Can't hear you in the back floor. Step on
up. Hi. I'm Laura with Harbor Floral, your local flower shop in North Morro Bay.
Laura has been wonderful and very, very helpful with my efforts to put together the Halloween open house. And we have, together with Laura, we have rounded up the wonderful business owners in North Morro Bay Lolo's, Taco Temple, Spencer's Market, the Blue Bean, the Beach House, Harbor Floral. And we are all putting together this wonderful event happening on Halloween. There will be a cakewalk with lots of cakes, cotton candy, popcorn. There will be free hot chocolate for the kids at the Blue Bean. They can proceed down the street trick-or-treating to the other businesses. Laura, I understand, is putting together a little coloring station. There will be a Pirate's Cove at the Beach House. So a lot of fun things will be going on, and if they continue on down the street and make a few, maybe make a donation to the food bank, which would be greatly appreciated, and visit all seven of our businesses, they will have a punch card. It'll be punched all along the way, and they'll be entered to win lots of wonderful prizes, one of which being a $70.
This is both a blessing and a curse to our inhabitants. On one side of the coin, we offer a safe local commute to some of the best-rated schools in all of California, as well as some of the most beautiful scenery. But on the other side, there's a lack of things to do for most of us who are fresh out of high school. And most people who live here usually can't afford to go out and do much in their own town. And the ones who can usually commute to slower outside of the county. Over the past month, I've been meeting with local musicians, artists, and businesses to try and come together to promote a free local festival for the community. And we already have about 5 to 8 bands willing to do the event for free. Several vendors have agreed to support us by collecting donations for the event and providing booths showcasing artists and wares and concession stands. And we're prepared to coordinate and promote the whole event. We have several sites in mind for the event, but feel the most ideal location would be Delmar Park in the north end of town, and we're aware that it's relatively close to an elementary school and are prepared to keep it clean and fun for the family. And this site will provide accommodations for all of the bands, all of the fans, and as well as provide some noise control on the bowl on the south end of the park. And we can point PAs towards the pastures. I'm sure that the cows won't really mind that much. And by providing a free event for the community, we hope to quite literally drum up some support for both the local businesses and for the artists themselves. And if we can respond to this new generation in Morro Bay and welcome them, we can help build a better future for our own town. So we hope that you consider sponsoring the event. And if anybody else has any more business opportunities for promoting, we would very much appreciate that as well. And I'm going to leave some business cards and contact information in the back, and if anybody would like to go ahead and support a donation or perhaps has a business who would like to sponsor our cause, then we would be more than grateful to hear from you.
Okay, and also you should talk to Joe Woods, who's in charge of the parks, and okay. See what we can work out.
All right, cool. Thank you very
Thank
much.
You.
Hi, my name is Louise Abbott. I'm a resident of Los Osos. We moved here almost 10 years ago, and a couple years after that, I got involved with our state parks, volunteering at the Museum of Natural History. I attended Ruth Coleman's lecture, Director of State Parks, a couple weeks ago when she was in town. And she said several things that are quite disturbing. One of them was that there's $1.4 billion of deferred maintenance in the state park system. If you want proof, drive down State Park Road. That's been on the list. I know Greg Smith promised to fix it before he retired, and that didn't happen. One of the comments that she made that I thought was really, really interesting is that when the legislature is looking at budget issues, that they tend to focus on the acute issues. State Parks is in a chronic problem, and it's been in a chronic problem for years. Vandalism is up fourfold over what it was before. And I am just terrified at what's going to happen if Prop 21 does not pass. She talked about camping in Southern California, and she met a young woman of 26 years who was a ranger, and she was on duty that night. And Ruth asked her how many rangers were on duty, and she said, only her. And she says, you're alone in charge of this whole campsite? And she says, no, actually, I'm in charge of 3 campsites. So this 126-year-old woman was in charge of the security for 3 campsites, 20 miles distance total, for over 3,000 people. And that's what the state park system has gotten to. My husband and I are Silicon Valley escapees. and I come from a technical background. And right now we're having people ask for their admission back at our fine museum because so much is just broken. And the reason we have anything going there is from people like me and other volunteers who use our professional expertise to do what we can, but we can't do it all. Major innovations are needed locally. The impact of our state parks on the local economy is just astonishing, and what it brings to businesses, hotels, and restaurants, and everything else. So I would highly support Prop 21.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Norma Whiteman. I'm from North Morrow Bay, and I want to follow up Louise's comments about support of Prop 21. You'll be voting on it, a resolution later tonight, and I ask for your unanimous support. I am a community volunteer for the Bird Festival and for Morrow Bay Photo Expo. Morrow Bay, as you know, is a place where you can discover your better nature, right? Well, that's the slogan on the billboard at the east end of town. And much of that nature is due to our wonderful state park.
Hello, my name is Linda Winters, and I'm back. For those of you who don't remember, I was here two times before to speak of the benefits of Proposition 21. A quick review of what Proposition 21 entails: an $18 fee that goes into attached to 28 million vehicles that goes into a designated trust fund that helps to support state parks and separate them from the general fund, which will keep them safe and sound for all of us because, once again, the state parks belong to all of us. So, Chapter 3 of this saga of Prop 21. I've been working on this campaign for 3 years now, and I'd like to share with you some of the things that the naysayers are saying. First of all, I don't use the state parks. Well, that's your prerogative. It is a privilege that has been given to each and every one of us, and if you choose not to use them, you're lost. Okay, the users should be paying all the fees. Well, once again, there's the thought that if all of you, the fees that the state parks charge are based on the total number of people in California. If it was only up to the users, then those fees would be so exorbitant that pretty soon nobody would be able to afford to go to those state parks that we all know and love. And I saved the best for last. Number 3. I don't understand what vehicles have to do with state parks. What? When was the last time you ever saw anybody in California walking anywhere? Except for Noah Smuckler. We take our cars to drive to the gym to get exercise, for heaven's sakes. We are a mobile society that depend on our cars. So it's a fair fee to charge 28 million cars to get all of us back to belonging to these state parks. Now, I ask each and every one of you, I'm going to step down off my bandstand. Okay, I ask each and every one of you, number one, to go out and use your head and go out and vote. Number two, listen to your heart and help us to save these wonderful lands that have been saved for us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. My name is Mary Golden. I'm the Executive Director of Central Coast Natural History Association. And you can tell from our previous speakers how passionate our docents are about what they do. You can see the surface of the state parks and how beautiful they are. But what you don't realize is that there are roughly 3 times as many volunteers running our state parks as there are paid employees. That's how bad it's gotten, and that's how passionate our people are about their parks. So I, too, am here to thank you for the support that you've given these past years to the Save Our State Park campaign and now to Prop 21. It's very much appreciated. The Prop 21 campaign has an unprecedented 700 organizations that have endorsed this initiative because they believe strongly that state parks are not only beneficial, and we could go on and on about how beneficial our state parks. If you live here, you pretty much know that. But also we want to address the people who don't think that they need to support state parks and never use it. And again, I just want to mention a couple of statistics. Locally, state parks bring in over $104 million per year, statewide over $4 billion. So this is an economic engine that our county can't afford to lose or to keep underfunding, as it's been underfunded for 30 years, or our state. So one thing that I want to point out is that it's our turn to be alive right now, and the generations that came before us took great pains to save these lands for all of us. And I feel like it's our turn, it's our watch now, and we can't let this happen. We can't let the jewel of California state parks continue to deteriorate. I've been talking to state park personnel who say, I don't know how we can keep doing this. Morale is down, everyone's exhausted, everyone's doing too many jobs at once, as the previous speaker was talking about, one ranger for one night over three state parks. So this is a crisis situation, and I thank you for your support in joining those 700 organizations who have already endorsed Prop 21. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Joan Solo, and I'm here for a couple of reasons tonight. First, I'd like to just show you, if you have not already seen, a copy of the Morro Bay Visitor's Guide that the TBID, the Morro Bay Access, having people turn out for their event. That commercial was supported in Bakersfield and Fresno on television spots. In addition, we promoted Morro Bay heavily through the Savor the Central Coast event, which is a sunset food and wine event. I will let you know that following the sunset food and wine event, your TBID worked very hard to bring together not one, but two exhausting travel tours for travel writers through Morro Bay out to the oyster beds, where they experienced aquaculture, where our oyster farmers out there pulled the oysters directly out of the bay, brought them forward, and they landed on the table. Out of all of those travel writers, there were 20 that came through in one group and another 14 that came through in another. And out of all of those, we had editors from Wine Aficionado, Wine 101, Savoir, Bon Appetit, Vogue magazine, The New Yorker, the Chicago Tribune, The Herald, Coastal Living. There were numerous magazines that are nationwide publications that your TBID brought people in to experience the beauty and the bounty of Morro Bay. And I should say that out of all of those, only 7 of those travel writers spent the night in hotels. And the rest of those 3 days were spent promoting all of the other businesses in Morro Bay and all of the beauty and the bounty of our state parks and our pristine bay. And one of them asked me what they would find on our beach. And I had to think about that question for a second, and then I answered them, "Where are you from?" And they said, "Florida." I said, "Absolutely nothing." Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Nancy Castle, having a split personality this evening. First, I would like to thank staff very much for the work that's been done to generate our contract, which is your item D2 under new business. We worked back and forth. AGP is very pleased with the contract as it got written. I would like to say that the guidelines and policies was a rush type job, and I have sent a new copy of that to Rob and Andrea so that the typos will be removed if anyone noticed any of those. So thanks to you, and I hope you pass it, and we continue to videotape all of your meetings, and everybody continues to watch them out there. Secondly, I would like to share with you that we're having a Historical Society meeting November 7th right here in the Vets Hall, because we are going to have Morro Bay's treasure, Bozzo Coroscelli, being the featured program, the featured speaker. We will also be presenting 30-minute cut of his movie, Bozzo, that Tom Walters and Hillary Grant have been producing, and the evening should be really wonderful. Boto is an amazing person for Morro Bay. He was instrumental in teaching music to many people, Kent Nagano being one of the more famous. I was a violinist. I was not very good. And he also, in the 70s, recognized the challenges then of the divide between the Embarcadero and the town of Morro Bay. And so he was instrumental in developing the Centennial Staircase as well as the giant chessboard. He's done a variety of sculptures around town. He is a wonderful storyteller. The meeting starts at 5 p.m. here at the Vets Hall. It's Sunday, November 7th, and everyone is involved. If first there is a potluck and a short business meeting, we hope everybody will come and bring food. If you just want to come for the program, we're going to start it right at 6 o'clock. So thank you for everything, and have a good meeting.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor, Council, staff, and citizens. My name is Keith Taylor, resident of Morro Bay, friend of the Morro Bay Fire Department. I'm here tonight to say Mayor Peters, Councilman Grantham, Councilman Winholz, thank you for your support of our fire department and getting our fire station built, although it's not built yet. And the other thing is that Mayor Peters and Councilman Grantham, your work on Measure Q and really helping us to get that, enable us to get our fire engine 5392 and the rescue vehicle. And so I want to thank you for that and for your service to our community. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bandwagon. These statements were made at a time when there had been no actual commitment made by the PERC Corporation. I want to emphasize that people ran all over town saying this was a done deal, they're going to save a bunch of money, and the facts weren't in. Meantime, three other candidates, one for mayor and two council candidates, withheld their judgment pending getting all of the facts on the table. They were castigated for doing this, but as it turns out, their maturity of judgment was correct. When PERC was pressed to put hard numbers on the table, they simply dropped out of the process. This happened about 2 weeks ago. Had the three cheerleaders for PERC done even a little critical research, they would have discovered that not everyone with whom PERC has had dealings has been happy with the result. In fact, what happened here was very similar to what had happened in the city of Fillmore. PERC dropped out of the competition when they were asked for a real bid, and then they came back later complaining that they should have stayed in. There is a lesson in all of this for me. We have two council candidates and a mayoral candidate who prematurely jumped on the PERC bandwagon, blinded by their desire to be environmental, but without examining all of the facts. And we had another set of candidates, one for mayor and two for council, who exhibited critical judgment and maturity of thinking by not jumping on the bandwagon until all of the facts became known. This is yet another reason that I'll be voting for Bill Yates for mayor, George League and Nancy Johnson for council next Tuesday, and not those other candidates. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and Council and vast audience. I just want to follow up a little bit on what Noah said earlier about the tree planting on Saturday. I was very privileged to be there that day as a master gardener, and we handed out information on picking a tree and taking care of your tree. And I can't remember ever seeing such a wonderfully cooperative event go on in the city. There were not only all the volunteer groups, but there was a lot of city staff out working. There were council members there. It was just unbelievable, the work and the cooperation that went into that event. And the trees looked great, and they got planted. And I think, above all, the person who worked the hardest had to be Noah Smuckler. I could not believe he was still going planting trees after the rest of us were packing up and getting ready to go home. So I'm going to say thank you to all of the staff members and all of those wonderful volunteers who were out there on Saturday. Turned out to be absolutely perfect weather for such an event, and it was a perfect event. Thank you.
Thank you.
Nancy, thanks for bringing that up. I actually forgot to mention the Teen Advisory Committee. They had members that came out
right,
from the beginning, and the last tree, they were there with me putting it in and just doing a great job. So
it was just
unbelievable. I had a lot of help.
Every little, from little yeah. guys to teenagers. It was wonderful.
Good evening. I'm Robin Cole, and I live up on Juniper behind Spencer's Market. And I think this probably is an affair that the Public Works would be involved in, but I just thought you should be aware of the situation. I'm here because I'm really concerned about the removal of a big, gorgeous, gigantic Monterey cypress that is adjacent to my property. I'm sure it's indigenous and probably here many, many years before anybody in this room ever made it here. PG&E has decided, I guess, that they're tired of trimming around it. That's what they have done in previous years. But they have now posted a notice that it will be destroyed. Of course, it's a home to many birds. I've seen owls and others. It's a wind barrier, and it also is a barrier for the underground water that just rushes down when we have heavy rains in that area. And the basement of my house has actually been a little bit flooded with the water, and I really hate to think of what will happen when those wonderful big roots that go as deep as the tree is high are no more. So I've tried to beat the bushes to get $250 to make an appeal, and now I understand that I also must hire an arborist. And I think we ought to think long and hard about
council member. So I encourage everybody to come out Tuesday and vote. That's the most important thing. I wish you luck, Betty. I wish all the council members luck. And we'll see you guys on the other side. Thanks.
Thank you.
My name is Dorothy Cutter. That was a beautiful example of Bill Yeats being the chameleon and rewriting his own history. I've lived here for 52 years, and he was the worst mayor we ever had. He was rude. He was disrespectful to citizens. When he was mayor, he made some terrible investments. Never followed through with his grandiose plans. He emptied the city coffers with those investments, and we are still stuck with them. He has criticized his opponent because she could not come up with an instant list of accomplishments. Unlike him, Betty does what she does for the benefit of the citizens because that is her job and not to polish her ego. Bill Yeats says he supports businesses, but the only businesses he supports are a narrow group of his cronies. The funniest thing I have heard from his supporters is that Betty voted against the dog park. Now, how silly is that? Without Betty pushing that project, we wouldn't have a dog park. Ask any dog owner. Please do not, I repeat, do not vote for Bill Yeats.
Good evening. My name is Ann Reeves, and I'm a gnat from Morro Bay. This is Bill Yeats' campaign right here. You got it in your mailbox. It's called the Seagull Sentinel. That's not exactly how I describe it. Anyway, I cannot tell you how disgusting this whole election thing has been. Bill Yates has allowed the wells to carry his water, and now the barters who happily carry his water. He said from the get-go he was going to run a clean campaign. He makes Washington look clean. And I would urge every citizen to read this, and when you cast a vote for somebody who really has some integrity. Morro Bay needs it. Morro Bay needs to go in the right direction and not continue the cronyism that's gone on. I have 32 years ago when I came up here the first time. My daughter told me, don't get involved in the politics, Mother. It will drive you crazy. Well, my daughter was always smart.
Good evening, council, staff, and public. My name is June Christoph Jones. I am a resident of Morro Bay for over 30 years, and I'm proud to live here. And one of the reasons that drew me here in the first place and one of the reasons I stay here is because of the beautiful environment that we live in and the great recreational opportunities that we have. I am here in support of Proposition 21. I hope you will vote tonight unanimously to support it. Our economic livelihood is dependent on our state parks, as well as just good care and management of our ecosystem. I don't want to repeat all the things that were brought up earlier about Proposition 21. There's a lot of good things about it, but one thing has been mentioned yet, and that is if it passes, every person in California that has a vehicle will be entitled to free day use at all 278 state parks. Right now, due to budget cuts, a lot of the state parks, they're threatened to be closed. They've closed down parts of them, and many of them, they do charge fees for day use. Recently, my dad was camping at San Simeon State Beach, and my husband and I went up to visit him for dinner. So we were there for probably about 3 hours. We had to pay a $10 day use fee just to go in for 2 hours. I'm not faulting the state parks for doing this. They're trying to raise revenues however they can. But right now, all those revenues that state parks do bring in, it goes into the general fund. And in Sacramento, they get to decide what to do with that money. And state parks have been falling at the bottom of the priority list for over three decades. This proposition, I believe, is a win-win proposition. It's good for the environment. It's good for our local businesses. And I think you have a good opportunity tonight to vote in support of it and use your leadership and show the public that you really do support our businesses and a nice, healthy environment that we all enjoy living in. Day after day, we drive down there all the way back, and they do a roll call, and then you move up the list closer to getting a campsite, and we drive home. The next day, we'd drive down, and we'd come back day after day until finally we got to the top of the list and we got a campsite. And it was a great opportunity for our whole family to be outside experiencing nature. And it changed my life. When I moved to Cal Poly, I became a biology major and graduated in environmental biology. And I don't think I probably would have had that love for the outdoors and that drive if I hadn't had that camping experience. So we can't make camping fees go away. That's not going to be free. But we can make the state parks available to every citizen that owns a car in California and let them take their children and their grandchildren. And that's what I'd like to do. And I'd like it to be a system that is in good repair and well-staffed and safe. We have an opportunity to vote next Tuesday on this issue.
Sorry, I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's right.
Thank you
all for listening. Please vote yes on Proposition 21.
Thank you. I saw you turn it off. I didn't hear it.
Hi, Dave Nelson. I too live up on Juniper, and I find it really appalling, and it really shows the council's attitude about leaving stuff up to the staff and not taking a proactive action here. This is an old tree we're talking about up there. It's probably one of the older Monterey cypresses that are left. You see them dropping all the time. bunch of them just went down in Cayugas. But, you know, a citizen like Robin Cole shouldn't have to go into her funds to hire an arborist. I called Public Works. No arborist has even looked at this tree. This tree is healthy. The only reason it's getting cut down is it's a burden on PG&E. I've lived there for 11 years. My power has never gone out because of that tree. My TV cable runs right through that tree. They've pruned that tree over the years faithfully. It costs more. It costs PG&E money, so let's just tear it down. I think it's ridiculous, and it reflects on you as a council to make citizens like us go out and do the right thing. The right thing here is really simple. Look at the tree. First thing I wanted to find out was, is the tree sick? No, the tree's not sick. So you're going to cut it down. That's just dumb. And putting the burden on citizens to do what should be your job, to tell your staff that that's just a dumb idea to tell PG&E to trim the tree, is wrong. But let me go to what Mr. Barta said. You know, jumping on bandwagons have been going around a long time. And Mr. Yates jumped on one of the bigger ones, along with a few of you that sit on the council, which was the power plant. And I'd like to thank Betty. Mr. Barta did us a favor putting all your no votes in here, because I agree with quite a few of them. And the big ones, of course, is the general plan, which Mr. Barta had a lot to do with, that the Coastal Commission can't even believe that we're sending up there. The other ones, of course, the wastewater treatment plant. The lesson from PERC is that there's alternatives out there. We don't have to go to these cronies that build all these sewer plants in our county, because that's what they do. That sewer plant is old technology. I don't care. PERC has 22 plants. I haven't looked at all their record, but from what I see, it's a lot less money than this old technology. And I know for a fact that the Environmental Defense League will give you all kinds of alternatives for alternative sewer plants. All you have to do is look at them. But I know we don't have a staff. Well, that's what you're supposed to do. I mean, I can read stuff and I can see what the potential of something is before you ask your staff to jump through hoops and do this and do that. I mean, the technology that we're building isn't the best technology, and it's costly. And in the long run, it's going to cost us all. He showed Fillmore. Look at the Fillmore and Santa Paula sewer rates, $53 and $106. So go with that.
Okay. Well, a little bit on the brighter side of life. Nancy Castle spoke about the boat show that's going to be there. Also, on our Morro Bay photo book, Then and Now, that we've published to the Historical Society, the three authors will be there. People ask me, where can you buy the boat? I'm sorry, Gary Johnson, Madam Mayor, City Council, Chief Olivas, Chief Pond, and this great staff we have on our right. That it's going to be the book signers. We'll be there to sign the books. We'll be there November 7th, and we'll sign the books and enjoy a nice evening. And also, I want to say, not only was I on the committee for the expo, I was also a leader. And like Mayor Janice says, the Bird Festival,
I'd like to add my vote for saving.
Could you give us your name first, please?
Oh, yes, thank you. I'm Natalia Merzoyan.
Thank you.
And I live in Morro Bay. And I'd like to add my vote to saving the cypress tree that is at risk here. I like to say that I grew up going to Pacific Grove every summer when I was young, and the thing that I loved most about that area is all the trees, and I can tell you that nobody over there would allow that to happen, period, no question. They have trees in the middle of the road. Cars have to drive around them because they ain't going to cut them down, no how. And I'd like to also express my appreciation to NOAA and all the people that planted the trees, and I know one of our mayoral candidates, Betty Winholtz, is an avid tree supporter, and that's only one of the reasons that I'm supporting her in her campaign for mayor. Another one is, well, let me say, I really appreciated the campaigns that have been going on in our community, our larger community, for assembly, state assembly. Cacho Hachajian and Hilda Zacharias both vowed that they were going to wage very positive campaigns, and they stuck to that, and I think it shows a lot about the characters of those people, and I'm proud to say that I'm in a community where they are running for office. And I unfortunately can't say I'm very happy with one of the campaigns that's been waged for mayor here because of the negativity, and it's been a huge disappointment to me. So I hope all the voters will pay attention to the kind of character of the people that manage to maintain their word and stay positive and not run around with their supporters stealing signs and a lot of dirty tricks going on. So I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good evening, Nancy Bass, Morro Bay resident. I too got the political, the election newspaper in the mail, like everyone else in town, and it had it appeared on the surface like it was an impartial analysis of the candidates and the issues that are so large in our community, but really it should have been printed as a paid political advertisement for Yates, League, and Johnson. There's a bunch of no votes that are listed for Councilman Winholtz, and I have some personal knowledge of some of it, such as the project on South Bay in Quintana, and then she filed a lawsuit. Well, she wasn't the only one. There were other civic-minded people that filed that lawsuit as well, including me. And when the reason we did it is because our planning commission, our council, and the coastal commission did not abide by the laws that they're governed by, and so we were forced to spend our personal money to bring that to court. And guess what? The judge found that we were right. That is just one indication of these no votes that Betty Winholtz did. And I am so proud of her for having done it. The paper has all the earmarks of John Barta. We know John Barta because we thought he was a lifetime appointee to the Planning Commission. But when he wasn't reappointed, the community drew a huge sigh of relief. Betty Winholtz gets my vote.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to council. One question, I don't know which Rob might be able to.
The appeals procedure is there's an appeals fee that's $250, and then it goes to Planning Commission for that appeal, is how the code stipulates on how that works. The tree was evaluated by the PG&E arborist, and he made the determination that it wasn't the appropriate tree for the location. And based on their request, we did post that tree.
So it's not a matter of the tree being healthy. It's just inappropriate in PG&E's mind.
Under primary power lines.
And the Planning Commission could hear it and potentially say no.
Potentially say no. Okay.
And then I think the that's appellant, one of the appeal fees that's refundable.
Then the appellant would receive their appeal fees back.
Right, okay.
To follow up on that, what about the arborist fees that they'd be paying?
Our code does not speak to arborist fees being refunded. We've had several cases where citizens have appealed tree removals, and they have paid the arborist fees for that case. I'm not sure that we would need an arborist report in this case because the health of the tree isn't in question. Even though our code requires it, I don't see why we would require that arborist report. I don't know if Mr. Schultz agrees with me, but
I think if you pay your $250, although an arborist report is requested, if you want to try your appeal without an arborist, we'd still have to process that appeal. We would mention that an arborist report wasn't included, as the code says, but that doesn't mean we wouldn't process the appeal without an arborist report.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to let people know that so that there is an option for you. And if you win your appeal, your fee is refunded. So, okay. Any other comments on comments?
Just at the break, if people would remember to vote for their city tree.
Okay. We'll take a short break and come back with our public hearing. For our public hearing, this is an introduction and first reading of an ordinance repealing and amending and reenacting Title 14 of the City of Morro Bay Municipal Code, Buildings and Construction. And Rob?
Good evening, Madam Mayor, City Council. This item here was really a group effort between public services and the fire department in getting this code put together. As you stated, this is for introduction and first reading of the building code, as we like to refer it, and the fire code, as we like to refer it. The 2010 California Building Standards Code will become effective on January 1st, 2011. This is part of the Building Standards Commission's, California Building Standards Commission's, triennial adoption cycle. We last adopted a new building code about this time in 2007. The California Building Standards Commission has determined that there are amendments necessary to the model codes to meet California's unique requirements. And once those amendments are made, they make a recommendation of what is known as the California Building Code. This 2010 California Building Code will become effective throughout the state of California, whether or not the council takes any action on this or not. But what we have done is we've made some amendments to the code to make it fit our unique situations, and those are outlined in the table on page 3 of the staff report with the matrix of the changes. What is new this year is the California Green Building Code, but it may be new, but many of the standards have been in place for quite some time. The recycling of construction debris, construction site erosion control, sediment best management practices, requirements for low-flow plumbing fixtures, and many others have been the norm throughout the state for many years. So this shouldn't be a big change. It's basically a compilation of those green type of building standards. And adoption of this code should have very little effect on building projects and is not really necessary to make any changes at this time, especially since this is the first year of it locally. In the matrix, I want to highlight a couple of items that we're not changing tonight but will need to be changed. The elevation datum that's used, and we'll need to update our chapter 14.72 to reflect those changes. And those are two items that are mandated by the state and federal government that will be coming forth in the near future. So in conclusion, we recommend that the City Council introduce for first reading by title only this ordinance number 564, basically repealing, amending, and reacting Title 14 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code. And with that, I'll attempt to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay, any questions?
Just one. Chief Pond, when we spoke earlier, you mentioned there was a change on 1408090 regarding combustible material that wasn't reflected on here.
That's correct. In F, under 14.808.090 F, number 1 says fire shall be conducted at a safe distance from, and then it left out combustible material. And
that's about the only comment that you had on that.
Correct.
Okay. Any other questions?
To follow up with Mr. Grantham's, in that same area, Chief, I'm having a little trouble with the numbering system here, but I think the 14.08, that's our numbers, and the 308, that's the state numbers?
Correct.
Okay.
That would be the number in the California Fire Code.
Okay. So regarding combustible materials and open fires, I think our current code says it has to be like 20 feet or something from a structure, and this is making it more just, quote, a safe distance.
Correct. The new code actually addresses it has a new paragraph that addresses what we had dealt with in the previous code, and what it left out were in this code is anything talking about barbecues and the portable fireplaces. So we wanted to put something in here. In the California Fire Code, it limits the distance from combustibles to 15 feet if it is more than a single or two-family residence. So three or more, it would have to be 15 feet or further. If it's less than that, there's no distance requirement. However, I didn't want to leave it with nothing said, so we put in a safe distance and following manufacturer's specifications.
Okay. So that's what that's about. Thanks. And I do have two other questions. Mr. Leivick, it's in Chapter 14.07. It's about backwater valves. Next to the last paragraph, D. It's the page right before the fire code, actually. It talks about that yourself or the health officer may shall be permitted to enter into properties for the purpose of inspection, observation, etc. It doesn't say if there needs to be prior notice or not. So my question is, can you walk in at any time to anybody's place, or do you have to give prior notice, or is this just in case of an emergency? I wasn't clear about that.
We wouldn't walk into somebody's house without giving prior notice. Unless it were an emergency. It's not specifically stated here, but I think common sense would dictate that we could not just barge into somebody's house unless it was an emergency. To inspect a backwater valve, you really don't need to get into the house. It's in the front yard area, so it's really not required. I think this is basically in case there's a failure of that backwater valve and we do need to get into the house for public sanitation. I know there has been instances in some communities where a backwater valve has failed and the house is filled with sewage, and you do need to enter the premises to clean it up.
Mm-hmm. So residents won't have a concern here, and we don't need to put in a sentence to protect ourselves or anything like that?
I don't believe so. Maybe, I don't know if Rob has any concern about that.
Basically, the ability to enter into property is going to be governed by the state law codes and the building codes there that do say, you know, in emergency situations we can, but any other situations you have to give reasonable notice. So
the word emergency wasn't in there. So I don't know if we need to add it or just let it be. I just wanted to raise the question.
Yeah, we haven't had that issue. The building code basically has allowed these exemptions for us, too, and we've never had any issue up to this point. I mean, certainly we could work on language if you wanted to. My preference is knowing that we want
that option.
One thing that our building inspector reminded me of when we were discussing this item was we have existing incentives for green building features. Dual plumbing system would be one of those green building features. So we've incentivized the public to look at that. And the plumbing code does allow for a dual plumbing system. I don't know if currently we're ready to take on a regulatory requirement to require a dual plumbing for both black water and gray water systems upon construction. I think we have the incentives in place. If somebody chooses to do it at the time of new construction and they have reduced fees and faster plan check processes, but I'm not sure that we're ready to take on that regulatory role.
As far as I understand, we are going to be getting a review of the Green Building Incentive Program some point in the future, take a look at how effective that's been. It's probably been light just because of the general building environment and atmosphere, but if we would like to help strengthen that to encourage further use of that program, that's something that will be coming back to us at some point.
Yes, briefly, I can let you know that there's been three projects that have availed themselves of that process, two gray water systems and one solar system that have used that incentive process.
Great, thank you. My other question has to do with the fire sprinkler requirements, and just knowing that in the previous expansion of fire sprinkler requirements, that's definitely increased the cost of construction, and I see our numbers here, or the intent here is now focused on single-family dwellings and townhouses and new construction of over 1,000 square feet. And Mr. Pond, I was just curious to know if you felt like there was some leeway there so that we're not getting that threshold so low that it becomes much more challenging for a smaller project to actually be competitive or be cost-efficient, and the trade-off, I guess, between what those sprinklers offer and fire safety compared to those costs?
Actually, with the new code, we're going to have less ability to change that than in the past, because the new code is inclusive of a residential sprinkler code. So whereas our old code would require anything 1,000 square feet or more to be sprinkled, the new code, which is going to be statewide requirement, requires it for any residential. It could be 200 square feet.
Wow.
So it's become essentially policy statewide.
So in your assessment, we've actually given our community as much of a buffer as possible with this adoption.
Correct.
Excuse me, if I have follow up, then I'm concerned then why we're offering an exemption to businesses on the west side of the Embarcadero.
That is a new a part to this ordinance, which is something that we felt we've been missing for a while. And for the last, 15, 20 years, any property that was any building built west of the Embarcadero required full sprinkling. When you think about some of the projects that could go in, there are some that have been thought about in the past and not done because of their sprinkler requirement. Some of them are so minor that the sprinklers would be onerous to the project. For instance, if somebody wanted to build a 6-foot by 6-foot kiosk to sell tickets or something, by this code they would have to sprinkle that. Even if nothing else is sprinkled on that property, they would have to tap into the water system, run the pipes, do a riser, and sprinkle that 1 6-foot by 6-foot building. With this exception, it would allow us to have something like that built with the building official and the fire official both agreeing that the threat from that structure wouldn't warrant a sprinkler system.
But haven't you also exempted other larger buildings like hotels and restaurants?
Because no.
Did I not read that in there? That the Embarcadero is excluded?
No.
Okay.
Anything west of the Embarcadero, if it was built, it required sprinklers. There was a restaurant that added 200 square feet. The entire 5,000 square foot building was retrofitted with sprinklers.
Okay. Yeah. So I'll tell you where my confusion is, that the exceptions fall for number one, and I assume that meant everything under it, but number two doesn't fall under number one. It's on, yes. Doesn't have a page, but it's section 90145. So what you're doing is actually bringing in the Embarcadero. I would like for this to be handled as are our other committees, because they will be made up of not council members, and I want to add that hopefully not other members who are members of other advisory boards as well. I would add that to section 113.3. And under 113.4, I would like the building official to be a screener for people that are interested in this committee, but then pass those names on to the council, who will then select them as they do other city bodies. And that would be my suggestion.
How's the rest of the council feel about that?
I guess I'd like to hear from staff if they felt like that was what that change would entail.
That's fine. We could come back with if that's what council does approve that with that minor change, and we can come back with that minor change. As I understand it, you want more of all of the applications coming to city council to pick at a time. The process is a little bit different. I thought maybe your question had to do more with the process. This committee is kind of like the mobile home rent control committee, in that we only would pick the group if an appeal is filed. We didn't feel like we wanted you to every year be picking new people for this board, because in my 13 years, I don't think we've ever formed it. Mm-hmm. And the mobile home, I think, has only been once. So, but if we certainly can make those changes to make it more applicable to your current situation, and that if an appeal was filed, we just have the building official obtain those applicants and then bring it forward to you to pick.
And am I clear that this one board can do all those different things in paragraph two? That they're also the local board of appeals, the housing appeal, the accessibility. So it's just a catch-all. Thanks.
Okay. Got it? Anything over here? All right. Would you like to make the motion then, Betty, and include that?
Yeah, I'm a little hesitant because I didn't make it all the way through the document, so I'm not sure what still is in there. It was difficult to compare. So I've only pointed out those few things that I've noticed. So I guess I want to warn staff that I may be bringing a few things back in a couple of weeks when we go, if there's a change to be made. But right now I would move approval for introduction and first reading of this ordinance with the change to Section 113 Board of Appeals, 113.3, that it also excludes volunteers that are currently serving on city advisory boards, and that 113.4 follow the same format that we do for other appointed committees.
Do I hear a second?
Excuse me, Madam Mayor. We'd also like you to make the change adding the words combustible materials in 308.1.1.1.1. Thank you.
Second.
Okay, there's a second. Discussion. I guess I wasn't paying attention to the first time you said it, but what would be your objection to having someone from PWEB or the Planning Commission being on that board? It seems to me that that would be a logical choice, and it's a board that only meets occasionally. So,
yeah, I was just trying to get a broader base of people. I guess it doesn't have to be, since it's not a standing committee,
right,
per se.
Right. I mean, is there any reason why that would be a problem? Okay. Because, I mean, it seems to me they've got some of that background that might be valuable already to serve on this, that's only going to be called for an event. So to bring somebody who's not familiar with it in, mm-hmm, might not be advantageous.
I can't think of any reason at
this
moment.
Would you consider removing that phrase from your
motion? Okay, so leave 113.3 as is, if it's okay with the second.
Is that all right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Are you clear, Bridget? And then the combustible materials addition. You got that, right? Okay. All right. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. Go ahead. Reading.
This is ordinance number 564, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay, repealing, amending, and reenacting Title 14 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code, Buildings and Construction.
Okay, and then let's go to our consent agenda. And anybody want to pull anything?
Only A6.
Okay. I'm going to pull A7.
I'm going to pull A2.
Okay. Anything else? I'll entertain a motion approving A1, 3, 4, and 5.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Any concerns or complaints were directed directly to our harbor department, and that we would retain the ability to see a continuance of them being flexible and responsive to concerns and complaints as we've seen during their time here. So that was one. The other was about Viewshed and just the concern that we're going to be bringing in another large utility vessel in sensitive Viewshed area. And I've been able to confirm with our staff that they will be housed closer to the Harbor Department office piers, and that's much more of a utilitarian area for our harbor. So I'm comfortable there. It's also very likely that the period that they're going to be utilizing our port will be shortened beyond just the 6 months. And we discussed potentially reducing this agreement if we felt like it was necessary because of that. And the last comment was about their inspection for their seaworthiness, and because they're going out to sea to other ports to do work, their insurance program and policy is requiring a full inspection. So that's going to be taken care of through their private insurer. So those were the main concerns that I heard. So at this point, I'm comfortable with this license agreement, and again, encourage any people that have problems with them as a neighbor, if it does turn out that they utilize this agreement, that we get a quick complaint into our harbor department so they can respond and take care of that. And I guess the last question for the council would be, do we want to continue with the 6 month agreement, or should we shorten it?
Okay. Anybody else want to shorten it beyond the 6 months?
I would not mind shortening it. I was thinking down to 3 months, particularly if they're already planning not to be here that long. I don't want them to leave and then come back, I guess, if they're going.
Well, but that's
going.
Exactly what they're talking about, perhaps having to leave and come back when they're doing other work and then coming back in.
And so I know we talked about the weather as being an issue of why right. they may need to come back. And I don't know if we could revisit that or if we just leave it at 6 months.
I'm comfortable leaving it at 6 months. I think we're protected in this agreement, and those issues that were brought to my attention are going to be taken care of. So it seems like we retain flexibility and control. So
okay.
I'll move that we approve the resolution number 54-10 with a 6 month license agreement to allow moorage for two vessels owned by AAS Construction.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. Betty, A6.
A6 has to do with our monthly water usage.
Before we do that, Rick had a question on A5.
My oversight. I should have pulled it. I just have a question, Eric. Are you currently maintaining a list of all abandoned craft, and how often is that updated?
Our AOAF contract, which is the Abandoned Watercraft Abatement Fund, and per the VTIP,
program, we're required to submit a list of vessels that would be candidates for demolition. So beyond the rest of the boats in the bay, am I keeping a list? No. But okay. We have a general idea of what's coming down the pike.
Are there any crafts that are in city slips that are considered abandoned?
No.
Thank you.
Okay. Sorry, Betty. Go ahead.
No problem. I just wanted to express my concern in the last paragraph on the back page. Talks about future water usage, that we would appeal to the state for an exception to our pumping in the Choro Valley should we need the water during the state water project. And just to be consistent, to express my desire that we rather talk to CMC about getting water from them instead.
I had a follow-up comment there. Just because we are about to enter the state water shutdown period with a three-week period of closure from November 1st to 21st, I'm happy that we're sending out notification to all addresses in Morro Bay, and just wanted to encourage everyone to do everything that we can to reduce water usage during that time. Not only does it reduce the draw on our local aquifers and supply, but also will save money by not putting a lot of burden on our local equipment and staff to deal with supplying water during this period. So please respond to this call to action and limit your water usage as much as possible during November 1st to the 21st.
Dylan, if you would, I have three
mapping.
Yeah.
Of the creek flow?
Not on the stream flow. On the pipes, the piping system.
Sure. Yeah. We're talking about the GIS maps. Yeah. Let me. You shifted gears quicker than I did. So.
I'm going to shift again in a second.
feel free. You go. We've put a lot of work in. The assistant engineer Mike Randall, who works underneath me. He's really spent, he's been with the city a little over 2 years now. He started out as an intern and then has been working. He's really spent the better part of 2 years working on these maps. And so what we've actually created now is we have a set of maps that we've published, the first version of these electronic maps, that have linked to them all of the as-built drawing information. So we've basically taken our best guess at everything that we think is out there, and we've pulled it into one resource and have cross-referenced and cross-linked those different data sets to give us the best picture of what we have buried out in the ground. My guess is it's probably 76% accurate, but it's a good jumping off point. And you go, we'll use that map, and over the next few years as we dive into issues and as we look into things and as things happen, it becomes a very useful tool, and we'll basically keep that map updated and grow our accuracy of those maps over time.
Excuse me. I just want to add one more thing to that. Not only are they valuable for our water crews, they're valuable for our citizens. When you're doing a remodel, there's calls, questions about where their sewer lateral, where their water line is located. It used to be a rather tedious effort to look up the paper maps to get that information to folks. Now it's a mouse click on a line on a drawing on the computer. It brings up that information very quickly, and it's helped out a lot in the development review process.
Okay. And just one last thing. You talked about replacing some pumps in the well fields and stuff. How many pumps do we have, and what's their life expectancy?
That's a great question. Okay, let me run through my head. We have probably 12 well pumps, 12 to 17, actually, now that I include the saltwater. There's probably 17 well pumps that we have. Life expectancy on a well can be anywhere from 10 to 50 years, depending on kind of the type of pump and where it's installed. We have booster pumps, probably another dozen of those. Distribution pumps, we have about 4 of those in the desal plant. Desal pressure pumps, we have about 8 of those. All told, we probably have 50 or 60 pumps in the city. You go, and then they have varying lifespans. So that's actually one of the big tasks that we're working on the next year is compiling a database of those and creating the maintenance schedules. Because I guess past practice in Morro Bay has been run it until the wheels fall off, and we're trying to get ahead of that and be a little more proactive so we can sort of capture the pumps and make sure we're maintaining them as sort of efficiently and cost-effectively as possible.
Thank you.
Okay. Any more comments? May I hear a motion?
Move approval of A6.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay, I pulled A7. Noah, did you want to talk about this one first because you put it on the agenda?
Sure. This is our Proposition 21. It's the State Parks and Wildlife Conservation Trust Fund Act. Hopefully, people will be voting yes for this next Tuesday. And basically, this is, as speakers have pointed out, an opportunity to pull the funding for our state park system from the state's general fund into a private trust fund that will be protected and will basically preserve our state parks and start to restore our state parks and the infrastructure within them for the long-term future. I have brought this forward to the council in hopes that we will officially endorse this as a city based upon the amount of dependency we have on our state parks locally, the importance they have for not only our residents and our quality of life of our residents, but also the tourists that come from around the world. We have some of the most special state parks locally in the whole system. I would submit that our state park system is so vast that almost anywhere in the state could highlight a very unique state park for their community and therefore warrants the importance of passing Proposition 21. I see this $18 a year fee on your vehicle as a good opportunity to become able to drive into a state park at any point, at any time during the year, and utilize its facilities. That's a direct opportunity. And then, of course, what state parks offer us in the form of fresh air, water, it's an amazing deal. I spend that much on burritos in 1 week.
Let me clarify your comment. He says until they change it, but since it's by the vote of the people, we can't change that unless the people choose to change it. Would that be true? Okay. So I think we're pretty safe.
I did have one typo correction, and this is on me. That first paragraph there, the first whereas, I believe we'd want to add a semicolon and following that, leading into the rest.
Oh.
So with that addition, I move that we approve agenda item A7 and officially endorse Proposition 21.
Do I hear a second? Second from Rick? Okay. Discussion. I was going to pull this because philosophically, and I know the people out there know this, I'm opposed to this because I feel that there's a lot of people in the state who are struggling so hard to just put food on the table. And another $18 is a lot of money to them. So I was, but that's going to be my own philosophical discussion that I'm going to do at the ballot box. I also think it's very important as a city to support this measure, and so I am going to vote in favor of it.
And I would just want to add the disappointment on behalf of the state that this used to be an enterprise fund that they've raided
right
through the years that they should have never done, and it's just one more example of how dysfunctional it is and putting it back on. And I agree with you, how you feel. It's very unfair to put this on the mm-hmm. voters.
I'd rather see it as a fee at each park, but again, if that goes in the general fund, I understand that doesn't work. So, yep. And I do feel it's important for us to be united in supporting it. So, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Thank you. Okay. Moving on to item D1, resolution determining the issuance of an alcoholic beverage control permit for a wine tasting room located at 1099 Embarcadero. Rob Schultz this time.
Yes, this is a resolution in front of you to approve the issuance of an ABC permit for wine tasting room located at 1099 Embarcadero. That's right at the bottom of Beach Street in the Embarcadero. I think it's previously been a Halloween costume place. Typically what happens, because in this area on the Embarcadero there is a over-concentration of ABC alcohol license that have been issued, that if one comes forward, it automatically has to be denied by ABC. And so it's in front of you for a resolution for approval of it. The police department has reviewed it and doesn't have any significant concerns at this time with an ABC license being issued. It's also in conformance with your previous actions and when you requested goals be met by developing ways to attract new businesses, and this certainly would meet that goal of allowing this business to move forward. They have obtained their CUP for the business that's already gone to planning. There may be a CDP required because it's in the original jurisdiction, and the applicant knows that that has to be taken care of with Coastal Commission. With that, I'll open up for any questions.
Okay, questions?
Were there any previous denials in that area? I mean, is this like the third denial for, or the first? Or
we had the one on the wine tasting bar that was up more downtown area that requested it, and we brought that in front of you for a resolution. That was the last one. I can't think of a previous one that's come in front of you. Those are the two most recent new ones that we've added in the concentrated areas.
Another question?
I have a question. Mr. Schultz, how does this relate to the hearing last Monday before the Planning Commission where they had – this is only about getting a license. It's not about that whole planning development?
Correct. And this is just a separate – even though you're allowing this liquor license, he still has to obtain his CUP and any appeal to that CUP, and he has to obtain a CDP. So those are separate required permits. This would just allow also for the alcohol license.
Question, Carla?
Yeah, so just for clarification, what you said, if I understood, is that no matter where somebody applied for this license, they would automatically be denied and then it comes before us? So it's not just...
It automatically is denied. I looked back in the folder and found actually that staff previously... I'm trying to think of the address now, had done it probably about 8 or 9 years ago, because it doesn't specifically say city council, it just says the city has to approve it. But under the last two, we've decided that that's not a decision really city staff should be making. It should come in front of the council for that ultimate determination by doing it by resolution. So each...
The main focus is wine and wine tasting. They've also applied for the ability to serve wine by the glass through the ABC. That is still under consideration. But that involves being able to provide food service, hot food service there before they can serve wine by the glass. As was stated in the Planning Commission hearing, this is a startup business, doesn't really know how successful it's going to be, starting with wines, wine tasting, gifts, and those products that are associated with wine shops.
How does that fit with our zoning down there?
It's allowed in that zone.
Because it's south of Beach Street?
Yes.
Move approval of D1.
Second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. Item D2, review and approval of the Video Production Services and Local Government Channel Insertion Point Management Agreement with AGP Video.
Good morning. Good morning. Good evening.
Been a Mayor long day, Andrea.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. We're pleased to bring this agreement forward to you. As you're aware, we've been working on it for some time. We've met a number of times with AGP and with city staff, and we feel like we've got an agreement, certainly that both parties, it looks like, have agreed to. And we heard from Ms. Castle this evening during our public comment. I wanted to touch base on a couple of the changes. I don't
particularly think we have significant changes, but I wanted to bring to your attention a couple of the changes that we have made. You might recall that you adopted a budget which included $60,000 for AGP video this year, so that is currently happening. And part of that budget basically included a reduction of meetings. So we're currently, the prior agreement that we had talked about 140 possible meetings. We have 120 city public meetings with all our advisory boards, and we're currently recording all those, and those are put on. We have the ability, that's basically 24 city council and planning commission meetings and 12 meetings of the rest of the boards. So you can certainly understand that we have an ability, and it's in the contract here, if we don't have a meeting, when we have an extra meeting, we can switch out a regular meeting to make that a special meeting. So we have some wiggle room there. Certainly, we also have included in the contract, if we want to do an additional meeting after our 120, that's at $500 per meeting. So we've got a little bit of lenience there. Some of the other changes that we made is basically just updated some of the language. I think we took out words like tape and inserted a more current term like record. We talked a little bit about the number of meetings. We also changed their reporting requirements. They were required to report on a monthly basis, and they felt that that was awfully onerous and time-consuming, so we changed that under Section 5.3 to monthly. Quarterly reports, and so they're still submitting reports on a quarterly basis. With the exception of those changes, I don't really have anything else to bring to your attention. I'm happy to answer any questions. The city attorney also worked a little bit on this agreement. He's here as well. And that concludes my report.
I have a question. This has taken us, I think, about 4 years to get to. Mm-hmm. Why is it a one-year agreement?
Well, I think that we put in language. Certainly, it's going to be budget dependent, so I think we'll revisit each year, but I don't anticipate us taking another 4 years to agree on it. I think the language that we inserted was, the city shall at its sole discretion extend the term of this agreement on a year-to-year basis depending upon the city budget appropriations for these services.
Okay.
And so you might understand that if for some reason we got more money in the budget or less money, then
okay.
we'd certainly need
okay,
to amend
I see.
It.
Yeah.
But you're able to extend it just on...
That makes sense. The,
yeah.
the 1 year just stood out after
sure, I understand.
Just how long to get to it. Other questions, Rick?
Thank you. In the last couple of years, have we... Because we're going from 140 to 120. So in the last couple of years, have we exceeded 120?
We may have exceeded 120 because we've done workshops. We've done a lot of... We've done all our Brown Act meetings. And I don't have a current accounting, but basically the 120 covers every meeting that we currently have and those meetings happening on a monthly basis. So, for instance, Harbor Advisory Board cancels two of their meetings per year. So currently, so we would have then an extra ability to have those two meetings. I think R&P usually cancels one. So we've got a little bit of wiggle room.
And then we get extra JPA ones.
Yeah, I would submit, and we've only had 22 regular meetings because of the November and the December, and the July. So you've got a couple you could make up there with special meetings.
No, we'll be on target with our regular meetings with probably at least six extra dates available for special meetings.
Questions?
No. Thank you. I just had a question just to confirm about the ability to have these meetings on slow span. Is that I didn't see a mention there, but I know that's been an appreciated component where people can go online if they don't have charter to be able to watch the meetings there. And I just want to confirm that that's going to continue.
If I recall correctly, that was a separate agreement that we brought forward outside this contract, and we didn't mention this, and I need to, I guess, look back on that, but certainly the intent is to continue on that. But I think we brought that forward in a different manner outside this agreement because this agreement wasn't complete.
Okay. And I definitely see some value in, I guess, the one-year contract because not only do we have a fluctuating budgetary situation, but I think there could be some improvements that we could consider as we move forward. I've appreciated how the county's meetings are available, how they're banked, and how you could access specific moments during the meeting, items during the meeting. I know that's an advanced online offering that isn't a component of this, but I would hope that we could strive to try to include that and have that be an element perhaps of a future contract, or at least consider the cost of that.
I will add on to that, just to remind the city councils that we do have a significant amount of PEG access funds, and I guess another separate project is to update the equipment here at the Veterans Hall, and we will bring that forward to you. AGP has been working on a plan, exactly what they want to do with this facility. So that is, again, separate outside this contract, but something that's down the road.
Okay. Betty?
After Rick. Okay.
Thank you. So we're paying for 120 meetings. Something happened. I was looking for that in here. If something happens, we only do 110, then that's just too bad for us. We pay for the 10 we don't get, right? That's just the way it is. Okay.
We just get a little extra.
But it's a good price. They've given us a...
Yeah. I was curious about that.
My question is on... I don't see... 4.4. Point two, and maybe this relates to the question you were just referring to, where it talks about the city shall provide playback equipment. So that money isn't part of the $60,000. That's something else that's coming out of the PEG money that you've just talked about, and that's a separate item, or is that even outside of PEG?
The repairs that, or the, I guess the upgrade, I should say, and repairs that the AGP is planning to do with the facility here is coming out of PEG access money. I need to read this.
Is that what we're talking about?
When city shall pay, that's using the PEG access money, not their own money, to upgrade the equipment.
Okay. And then that brings me to my second question. Does that take care of the quality of our meetings, since we've had a number of complaints this year? I assume it's because of equipment, that the quality hasn't been the best. And so how does that get addressed in a contract if we get meetings that aren't of good quality?
Well, it currently isn't addressed in the contract, I don't believe, from reading through it. AGP is certainly aware of the quality and the concerns, and I think part of their push to get their equipment upgraded is to deal with those quality issues. I think they've been they're certainly responsive to quality issues. I know they're extremely concerned about it. And I think this is the first step in getting this agreement done, and then the next step is to make sure that we stay on top of it and get that the upgrade done here in this facility.
And do you have a time frame for that, or do they have a time frame?
I don't, but I'm happy to talk to them and bring back the council, either in memo form or during our Friday update, an idea on what they're thinking. I know they've been working on a plan.
Do you want to ask Mr.
Yeah, I was going to say we've got Mr. Matthews.
I didn't realize
right
he
now.
Was sitting right out here.
Steve, could you address both the equipment and the streaming issues?
Sure.
Thanks.
Steve Matthew, AGP Video. Hi. directly to Councilmember Smuckler's query on the archiving system. One of the things that we did, and this will all tie back to the upgrade, one of the things that we did as a stopgap is the simulcast streaming system that you have. That system is not the poor man's system, but the easier system to get it online and give you an online presence. It is subject to whatever is being broadcast on Channel 20 and just the direct simulcast. But we have a whole archiving system, a server co-load there, and, you know, 8 terabytes of space to handle, you know, years' worth of meetings and things like that. And all of this would then hook into that system. All right, so that'll be made available. We'll put that as a line item with the upgrade. The quality issue has been driving me nuts. We have the oldest system in the county right here in Morro Bay. This is the birthplace of PEG access in the county of San Luis Obispo. So we've crippled it together over the years. I mean, we have actually paid for, and that's why we put line item. We paid for all of the decks that are in there playing the DVDs right now because the tape decks were got outmoded. They don't even manufacture magnetic recording tape anymore, and the machinery just got too old. So what's in there is not real high quality, but it's been doing the job. That isn't what the quality issue is. The quality issue is the entire system. It gets down to the wiring and everything in this building. We need to go through the entire system. It's just, it's old. It's 1998 is when we completed the in-house system in here. So that was Charter's first gift to the city and the start of the whole system in the county. So it's time to do it. There's enough money there to do it. We can really build a nice system here for what you guys have got in your PEG access fund. So,
what's your timeline?
I'm ready to move. I've gotten off of the road with the exception of the last 3 weeks because we did a big project in San Francisco that's sucking Billy's time and everybody else's. But I'm here and working on things like this. So I'd like to get this thing done as soon as you guys are ready to rock.
Okay. Any other questions for him?
Just one more.
Okay.
Ms. Luker, the $60,000 that we're paying to AGP, is some of that money coming from the T-bid and from the JPA, or are we paying the whole $60,000?
No, thank you. That's a great question. And I was... part of it is there's a portion of it coming from the PEG Access Fund. There's a portion Harbor Advisory is paying for their meetings. JPA is paying for their meetings. TBIT is paying for their meetings. I think that's the breakout. I want to say that PEG Access is about $15,000, but I'll confirm that. I meant to get that information. It's in the very front of our budget in the letter. But it's I think maybe $45,000 general fund, between $30,000 and
$45,000. So it's not as much.
The answer is yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions for Steve? Okay.
If I could, though, what brought us? We actually took 10% off of what our last 2 or 3 years fee was, and where it's really working out for you guys is we did that by totally eliminating all overtime, so you really have a flat rate now. There's no moving target going on anywhere. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Well, and I'll add my comment to this. I mean, AGP has been so good to us over the years. Granted, this is the birthplace, so we expected a little bit of special treatment, but they've given us a lot more than that, and I really appreciate that. I remember when this all started. So, I'm sorry, what?
And supporting a local business.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so I'm going to move approval of the contract.
Second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay, thank you. D3 is approval to send a letter to the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors recommending that they select Marianne Reese as the council member nominee for appointment to the California Coastal Commission. This was a request by Mayor Reese. She's been acting as the alternate to Cacho Asajan on the Coastal Commission and has actually served at a couple of meetings. She very much wants to continue to represent this community. She has dealt with a lot of coastal issues in Pismo Beach, so she's very familiar with that group and is running for re-election to election to the council rather than mayor. So would like to be able to have the support of the various cities for her candidacy. So that's why I brought it forward. And comments, questions?
Betty? My only question is if we should not act on this after the election since we don't know if she'll still be eligible.
The board's going to be acting on it beforehand. So
then what if they appoint her and
know,
she doesn't get elected?
I know. It's weird, but she needed this in before their meeting, I think, this week.
Tomorrow.
I think tomorrow. Tomorrow, yeah.
Well, the same would hold true, though, because Cacho's stepping down from his position.
Right.
So he'll only be there one more month or one more meeting. They have to replace him.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So.
Just maybe it's the Board of Soup's untimeliness. Or
well,
do they have a certain deadline?
I would say given the candidates and Marianne's tenure, I think she's a pretty good bet to win election to the council. So I think we could make the recommendation with pretty... That, okay, then? Would that meet with your approval? Okay. Anybody else have any concerns? Okay, well, I would move approval of sending a letter with that correction of saying the City of Morro Bay acknowledges the service of supervisor.
Second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Thank you. And Marianne thanks you. And item D4 is discussion of whether to hold a joint planning commission city council meeting on November 15th, and if the meeting is to be held, the topics to be discussed. And Rob, which live at this
yes.
time, right?
Good evening, Madam Mayor. Staff is looking for a decision from the city council whether you want to hold the joint planning commission meeting, and as you said, if the meeting is to be held, the topics for discussion. This item was before our planning commissioners at their last meeting last week. They suggested several topics for that meeting. Downtown revitalization, chain link fences as they're related to visual resources and LCP, local coastal plan consistency, the sign ordinance, discussion of the draft EIR for the wastewater treatment plant project, and the planning division's workload. In conclusion, we're hoping for a decision on whether you want to hold this meeting on November 15th and whether you want to talk about these topics or suggest others. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Councilmember Winhels and I have a difference of opinion on this. I brought it forward as whether we want to hold the meeting because we have the potential for, well, we know we're going to have a different council. We're probably going to have a different planning commission. And I just didn't feel that this was a meeting that we ought to have now, favoring instead putting a joint meeting just ahead of the goal setting in January when all those new people are in position. And they're going to be the ones that are going to be following through on all these things. So I thought that would be the better time and way to do it. So having said that, I'll let Betty have the second say because she doesn't agree with me.
It's true. I've raised before because we once tried to also not have our twice-a-year meetings. It does say in our municipal code that the council and the planning commission shall meet twice a year. And I think that we expect everyone else to uphold the municipal code. I think the council should uphold the municipal code. Regardless of who's here, it's a good discussion. It's not just for us. It's for the public. It's for those commissioners and those city council members that will still be here. And I think it's valuable to have that discussion and touch base. We can still have that second, the meeting that Ms. Peters is proposing, and after the first of the year will happen anyways. So it's not like this will replace that. It will just be the normal meeting that we should have anyways.
Okay. Rick?
I agree that we should adhere by municipal codes, but we should also adhere with some common sense. And I think that these meetings, instead of being held in November, should probably be held every year January or February after the people are in place. You know, we all like to have a say in what happens, but we're not going to be here that much longer. So it's I don't know. It just seems the people coming on, let them have the ability. They're the ones that are going to be working with the Planning Commission, not us. So seems to me that that would be a thing to.
Okay. Noah?
I guess I'm curious to know, because that's the night where a Planning Commission meeting is scheduled, what we would be bumping if we had the joint meeting or if we continued with a Planning Commission meeting.
Typically, the joint meetings are held during the hour prior to the Planning Commission's regular meeting, so from the 5 o'clock to the 6 o'clock hour. So then the Planning Commission meeting would have their regular meeting after that.
Has the Planning Commission, were any of the commissioners making a statement about not being able to attend that extra hour? Did they seem interested in that meeting? And seems like their list extends invitation to want to talk with us and get some feedback and have some dialogue.
Yes, they voiced interest in having a discussion, and nobody had any conflicts with the meeting time.
Okay. Well, I would like to go forward and have the meet. I think there's some important items that they've listed here, and an extra hour is not too much to put aside for a very important commission.
Carla?
Well, I certainly support NUM, and there's only one issue on here that I'd even really be that interested in talking about, only having an hour, and that's our sign ordinance. So I think we already have a workshop to talk about the EIR coming up. So and that would be more than an hour conversation.
Okay. Then I would just rebut in this way that you're asking, and that's about the process. You're asking, it's the top body of the city is going to violate its own code just for convenience, and I'm going to use that word convenience, when we expect other people and ourselves to abide by the municipal code in responding to all the other laws that we have. And I just think that's a bit much.
I'm not asking that we don't follow our own rules. I'm asking that we reschedule it.
You can't reschedule something that's not going to happen.
It'll happen. We can still have it.
But next year will happen regardless with two meetings. So what you're doing is you're eliminating one of the meetings for this year, and that's the truth of it, and only holding one instead of the two. Well,
then I guess we probably should have had more foresight to have scheduled it more appropriately when we first set the schedule, because I feel at this point, you know, it's the day before the election, and you have four, five, six changes potentially between the two bodies. And I just, I'm not interested in the meeting, but I'm just one vote.
Well, and then I would also suggest that you're belittling your advice and the group here. These people have multiple years of experience. I think you have lots to say about the sign ordinance or chain link fences or work globe particularly, and I think that's valuable input.
Well, I think it's better for the community to have that input from their newly elected officials and their newly appointed planning commission. They're the ones that are going to have to be following through on it, and I think they should have the say in it rather than us saying something, then the new group comes in, they don't agree, so they throw it all out and change it anyway. I think that that's giving respect to the process and the newly elected officials.
I think that's underestimating that the new people will actually throw those things out. That's assuming we don't have common sense now.
I'm going to move that we not hold our second Planning Commission City Council meeting at this time and defer it to when the new officers are in place.
Second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
3-2 with Smuckler and Winholtz opposed. Okay. Future agenda items. Anybody got one? Yep, we got one more meeting. Betty?
I'd like to talk about the role of the tree committee and its officialness or not officialness. I'd like to have that discussion.
Okay. Other people agree with that?
It's time.
Well, are you going to put that together?
I will.
Okay, I guess I got a question. What do you mean that it's officialness or non-officialness? What?
We have a tree committee that has interacted with staff and made some major decisions and changes in our community, and it's not an official body. It's a group of people that have gotten together and have offered their services, but they have been, I believe, offered the opportunity to have influence that others don't have. And I'd like to know if we want to make them official and recognize that status.
Okay. Do we have two other people that want to go there? Not me? No. Okay.
Not right now?
No. Okay. So.
No. That's not true. You guys are doing things. You're not just advising.
Rick, did you have anything future agenda?
No.
No? Okay.
So, Ms. Peters, just for clarification, if one person raises an item, does that person get to do a staff report on her own, or is it just not happen?
I believe you had to have support of two other members of the council. No? Okay. Anything for you, Carla, future agenda?
No, just remind everybody to get out and vote next week.
Okay. No one?
Oh, 2 weeks.
No. Okay.
Monday.
Looking at you, Rob.
Oh, yeah, next week.
I do have. No, it's not. I got one more.
I got one meeting in November.
No. Ours allow the single council member to do it on their own and bring forward the report.
Okay. All right. So you're going to... All right, with that, closing quote. This is by Western author Louis L'Amour. To make democracy work, we must be a nation of participants, not simply observers. One who does not vote has no right to complain.